hurtling over the precipice of my orgasm? I can't decide. All I know is that both my body and my soul are on fire, and any moment now I'm going to be lost to the flames.
Let go, Alex rumbles into my hair. Stop holding back. Give me everything, Argento. Let me have it.
God, I can't take it anymore. I can't fucking think. Moving quickly, I push him back far enough that I can rip open his leather jacket, hike up his t-shirt, and unbutton his jeans.
Whoa, Silver, stop.
His protest cuts off when I drive my hand down the front of his jeans and take hold of him. The words come to a jarring halt on his lips. A deep, satisfying pleasure courses through my veins, racing around my body, when I see how badly my touch is affecting him. He wants me. He craves me just as badly as I crave him, and that knowledge makes me feel so fucking powerful. I'm quick but gentle as I reposition him, teasing his dick so that it's upright and the swollen head of his cock is protruding from the top of his jeans. Alex looks down at his erection, at my hand that's shoved down his boxers exposing him, and a violent, urgent shudder racks his body.
Silver,
don't tell me not to. I want you to come too.
In your hand, here in the street,
he growls. Yes.
Fuck.
His mouth crashes down on mine, and I surrender myself to the madness of the moment. I don't give a shit if someone walks around the corner anymore. I don't care if Sheriff Hainsworth himself rolls up in his squad car and slaps a pair of handcuffs on us. The only thing that matters is the heavy, pulsing need churning inside me. The frantic, animalistic need that grips me as Alex consumes me in his kiss. The dazed, tense look on his face when he pulls back as I begin to work my hand up and down the length of his erection. His free hand claws at my shirt. He fists the material, yanking it up around my neck. And the next thing I know, he's pulling the cups of my bra down, exposing my breasts to the winter air, taking a painfully tight nipple into his mouth and sucking on it hard. Ah, shit! Shit! I let my head fall back against the wall again, panting as he licks and bites, thrusting his fingers into me faster and faster, my pussy aching with pleasure. He's rigid in my hand, slick pre-cum wetting his soft, silken, smooth skin, making it so easy for my palm to glide up and down his shaft. Alex lets out a savage, raw snarl, angling his wrist, using his thumb to rub against my clit as he continues to drive his fingers inside me. And I can't fucking take it anymore. Fuck, Alex. You're gonna make me come. I pant.
Good. Fucking do it. Do it. Come for me, Silver. Come on.
The orgasm isn't a slow, gradual build. It's instant, explosive, and takes me out at the knees. I can't keep quiet. I know my urgent, breathless cry of ecstasy echoes down Main Street. Too loud. Too obvious. But I can't bring myself to care. Alex has some sense about him, at least. He clamps his hand over my mouth, pressing his forehead against mine as I buck and shudder against his hand, riding out the most intense orgasm I've ever fucking experienced. I close my teeth around one of his fingers, clamping down, my eyes rolling back into my head, and Alex swears harshly under his breath. My pulse is racing out of control. I close my hand tighter around his dick, shuttling my fist up and down his now fully exposed cock, and Alex hisses through his teeth.
God, Silver, careful. If you don't stop.
I'm not going to stop. My entire body is still tingling and numb from my climax, but the powerful implosion of it has subsided, and it's his turn now. I grab hold of him with my other hand, using it to rub and squeeze the tip of his dick as I jerk him off. And Alex let out a guttural, wordless, rasping sound. His eyes flicker between my face and the narrow gap between our bodies. He seems gripped by the side of my hands, working and teasing at him, and I realize very fucking quickly that the fascination on his face is a major turn-on. He falls forward, bracing himself against the wall with both hands over my head, baring his teeth as he stares down at what I'm doing. I quicken my pace, using my thumb to massage the fat bead of pre-cum that's purling against the head of his cock into his skin.
Jesus Christ, Silver, Jesus, I'm... Fuck!
It's my turn to watch in fascination now, as thick ropes of cum erupt from him, jetting over my hands and up the sleeve of my jacket. My shirt still hiked up around my neck, my breasts still naked, and I gasp when another surge of the white, hot fluid lands on my bare stomach. Alex shivers as I continue to work my hands up and down his length. I'm sticky, covered in his cum, but I don't stop. Looking up, I find Alex's eyes closed, his lips parted, his head hanging between his shoulders as he tries to catch his breath. He jumps, too sensitive, hissing through his teeth, when I rub my fingers over the tip of his cock again.
Jesus wept, you're trying to kill me, he huffs. Stop, stop, I can't fucking take it.
I let him go, feeling rather proud of myself. It goes without saying that he makes me feel amazing, but knowing that I can make him this kind of crazy, well, it's seriously fucking satisfying. Alex opens one eye, groaning when he catches sight of me.
Fuck, I'm sorry, Argento. I made a fucking mess of you. No, don't touch anything. Stay still.
He puts himself away, fastening his pants with quick, sure movements, and then he's stooping at my feet, gathering snow in his cupped hands. I bite back a scream when he presses it against my stomach, using it to clean away his semen. Alex grins like the bastard that he is.
Sorry, it's not funny, I swear.
The way his eyes are dancing with amusement tells me that it is funny, though. The melted water runs down the front of my jeans, making me squeal, and Alex grabs the bandana hanging from his back pocket, using it to catch up the remaining wetness, drying me off with it. Then slowly, very slowly, he corrects my bra, straightening the fabric and guiding the cups back into place, covering my breasts. He fixes up my shirt next, and then collects more snow, reverently cleaning himself from my hands, apologizing again, softly and seriously this time, as he takes care of the mess he made of my jacket sleeve. His dark hair falls into his face, his eyes flicker upward from under drawn brows, assessing me through his wavy, tumbled locks, and my heart somersaults.
That wasn't supposed to happen, he confesses. I can't keep my hands off you. I have no idea how the fuck I'm supposed to restrain myself.
My fingers are wet and numb from the snow. I close them around Alex's hands, every part of me alive and singing, even from this small contact between us. Restraint is seriously overrated, Alessandro. Who needs it anyway? His full lips press together, holding back a smile as he leans down to me, resting his cheek against my forehead. I nestle into him, winding my arms around him, beneath the thick, musty-smelling leather of his jacket, and the universe and all its mysteries click into place. I don't know exactly how long the sun will burn for. I don't know how black holes work. I still don't know if there is life on other planets. But none of that's important anymore. Because here, in Alessandro Moretti's arms, everything makes perfect sense anyway.
Silver? Is that you?
I whip my head up, pulse thumping everywhere at the sound of my name. Standing under the streetlight, 8 feet away, Mr. Saxman from the convenience store, one of my father's high school friends, is standing stock still with a bulging brown paper bag in his arms. He's squinting into the shadows, hair dusted with snow, concern strewn across his face. I dig my fingers into Alex's back, horror coursing through me, as I realize just how mortifying it really would have been if one of my father's friends had shown up a few minutes ago. Alex huffs out a breath of laughter into my hair, refusing to turn his head.
Hi, Mr. Saxman. How are you?
His eyes crawl up and down Alex's back, presumably trying to figure out who I'm clinging to like a lost soul out here in the freezing cold night. He takes a step forward, but then pauses, seeming to think better of it.
I'm good. Everything okay here?
His voice is sharp, suspicious.
Of course, everything's perfect.
Plumes of fog billow on my breath, catching in the yellowed glow thrown off by the streetlight. I mention nothing about the fact that I'm wrapped around a dark-haired guy in a leather jacket that Mr. Saxman has probably never seen before, and Alex still doesn't turn. He just hums into my hair, a contented, relieved sound that almost makes my brain short out.
Okay, well, I don't mean to interrupt. It's too cold to be loitering around out here, though. Maybe you should think about heading on home.
Yes, Mr. Saxman. Don't worry, we were just about to leave.
Glad to hear it.
He heads off slowly down the high street, eyes still boring into the back of Alex's jacket, the fresh snow carpeting the sidewalk making stiff, creaking sounds beneath the soles of his boots. Alex begins to laugh, his shoulders shaking as he plants a kiss against my temple. I pinch his side, making him yelp.
Jerk. You could have at least made eye contact with the guy. He would have been less suspicious if you'd smiled and introduced yourself.
Alex leans back, an eyebrow arched in disagreement.
That guy would have taken one look at me and decided I was trying to mug you or something, Argento. You know it, I know it. Better I left him guessing. Come on, let's get some coffee before the blood freezes in your veins.
Text message received. 1-564-987-3491.
You're dead, bitch. I'm a hack out your tongue and fuck your dirty lion mouth.
4. Silver. I don't know. Maybe he's, he's not exactly cute, is he? I suppose you could say there is something charming about him. I am being seriously generous with my compliments right now, but my father looks mortally offended. He takes a step back in the hallway, folding his arms across his chest, frowning over the tops of his horn-rimmed hipster wannabe glasses at the subject of my concern. A small black furry creature stares balefully back up at him, baring its teeth, letting out a low, hostile growl.
He's just confused as all, Dad says defensively. He was locked up in a cage for months.
Exactly, which begs the question, don't you think he should be a little happier now that he's been liberated? He looks like he's gonna chew your eyes out.
Don't move. I think he's gonna lunge.
Dad gives me amused side eye.
And here I was thinking I'd raised a fearless, strong daughter who wasn't afraid of anything. He weighs 14 pounds, Syl. I think I can take him.
I screw my nose up, partly to block the smell emanating from the small animal guarding the entrance to the kitchen like his very life depends on it, but also because I'm not all that sure my father could take him. He's wiry, Dad, like muscular. He could probably jump from there and rip your throat out.
Dad tuts, shaking his head at me in a disappointed manner. I'm seconds away from disowning you. That dog is the sweetest, kindest, gentlest little soul I've ever laid. Shit! Holy fucking shit! Did you see that? He fucking lunged. He fucking did!
For one brief, brilliant moment, my father holds his hands to his throat like he really did think the dog was going to clamp its jaws around his neck and bite down. He drops his hands to his sides as soon as he catches me smirking at him.
Listen, this is not my fault. You didn't see him at the pound. He was all sweet and doe-eyed, lying on his back, staring up at me from inside his prison,
Dad stresses for effect.
I thought I was doing him a favor bringing him home with me. He didn't start displaying any of these murderous tendencies until I got him inside out of the wind and the front door was closed. Then it was like a switch flipped and he turned into this raging little psychopath. I can't get into my office, Silver. I'm gonna have to take him back to the pound first thing in the morning.
Whatever you think is best, I reply. My voice light, my tone going up at the end.
Cold, Silver. Real cold. The hell is wrong with you? There's no way he can go back to the pound. They kill dogs when people return them. Problem dogs. Do you want them to kill Nipper?
Nipper? You called him Nipper?
He's 6 years old. Someone else named him Nipper a long time ago. He's used to it now. I can't go around changing a dog's name just because it makes him sound...
bitey, I offer.
Yeah, well, he hasn't actually bitten anyone. Yet. Not that I know of, anyway. They have to tell you that kind of stuff when you adopt a dog, right?
I crouch down, rummaging in the bag of dog treats Dad bought for the savage little fucker, taking out a little bone-shaped morsel and gingerly holding it out to the dog. What is he, anyway? He looks like a miniature hippo with fur. A lot of fur.
They didn't know, Dad admits. They said they thought he was some sort of terrier. Maybe.
Nipper's quick dark eyes dart to me, and he growls, exposing his teeth again. I toss the treat toward him, and it lands at his feet. He skitters back, legs splaying in every direction as he scrambles to gain purchase against the hardwood, ears flat against his head as he turns tail and bolts, whimpering into the kitchen.
I groan, standing up straight again, dusting my hands off against my jeans.
I mean, are you sure it's even a dog? And why bother? We both know this is some weird attempt to lash out at Mom.
Dad rubs at the back of his neck, suddenly very focused on the light fitting above his head.
Jesus, I had no idea how dusty that thing had gotten. I think we're gonna need to get a cleaner soon, kiddo.
Dad, I'm embarrassed for you. Your avoidance tactics need serious work. Just admit it. You got a dog because Mom's allergic to them, and you want to make it as unpleasant here for her as possible.
Your mother moved out well over a month ago, Silver. I never had a dog before because I couldn't have one. Now I can have one. I don't see anything wrong with that. I'm not trying to make it uncomfortable for her here. I'm not even thinking about her now. This isn't her home anymore. She has her own house. She cannot have a dog there.
Fuck. I should have thought about it a little harder before bringing up Mom. After I sat down and told my parents about what really happened to me at Leon's spring fling party, things got bad. Really, really bad. Mom was hysterical, and Dad, I've never seen him so furious before. He hasn't stopped being furious either, since I still haven't told him the names of the boys who attacked and raped me in that bathroom. I wasn't ready to part with that specific piece of information then, and I'm still not ready to part with it. I just couldn't bear the thought of my father heading out into the night to find the monsters responsible for hurting me and hurting them back, because I saw that he wanted to. I saw the murderous look in his eyes, and I knew I needed to give him time to calm down before I handed over their identities. Mom waited all of a week to sit down with Dad and confess that she'd been cheating on him with her boss for the past 6 fucking months. Later, after Dad had smashed the glass coffee table in the living room and mown down the neighbor's mailbox as he'd fled the house, she'd told me sadly that secrets had eaten our family alive, and there was nothing left to do anymore but be honest with one another and see what could be repaired once all the smoke and the debris had cleared. She'd moved out that night and taken Max with her. It was strange. She didn't even ask if I would go with her, as if she'd already known there wouldn't be any point in even posing the question. I was always going to stay with Dad, because Dad was my person and I was his. I don't know when my father and I formed our quirky little coalition, but now that Mom's gone and Max is only here on the weekends, I realize that it's kind of been Dad and me against the world for some time now. It's terrible to admit this, and I would never say it out loud, but it doesn't really feel like all that much has changed. It has for Dad, I'm sure. He woke up one morning knowing his high school sweetheart loved him and the home they shared was a happy one. That evening, he found out his daughter had been hiding something monumentally horrible from him for months. And then, just to top it all off, his wife pulled him aside and told him she'd been fucking another guy behind his back. That has to do something to a guy. My suffering, pain, and hurt has made him feel weak and riddled with guilt, like he failed to protect and take care of me. Mom's betrayal has made him feel like half a man. He's doing a stellar fucking job of hiding it, but I know this is the lowest point in his life. If he wants to rescue a dog, even a dog as ornery and potentially rabid as Nipper, then who the hell am I to stand in his way? I don't apologize for bringing up the subject of his cheating wife. I've learned over the past month that when something bad happens to a community, to a person you love, it's all too easy to tiptoe through your days. Cringing and apologizing as you trip over accidental references and difficult topics, and the act of constantly saying you're sorry becomes both exhausting to you and infuriating to the other person. Dad and I have driven each other to the point of madness with our apologies. Instead, I thump him in the arm, nodding my head in the direction of the kitchen. You think we could trap him in there if we form a pincer movement? You close the living room door, and I get the hallway? The color's already fading from Dad's face.
Why? Are we quarantining him in there and writing the kitchen off as a no-go zone? 'Cause I need to rescue the coffee maker if that's the case. I can survive without a lot of things, but caffeine isn't one of them.
I was actually thinking we could go to Harry's and order some tacos.
He scowls. It's not Tuesday.
You can eat tacos on other days of the week, Dad.
Heresy.
Don't be so miserable. It's time you had a shave. Time you left the house, too. I stand behind him, placing my hands against his shoulder blades, urging him toward the stairs.
Nice try, kiddo. You'll recall that I was growing this beard before the apocalypse. I am not shaving.
Damn.
He reluctantly climbs the bottom step of the stairs.
I'm not really feeling Harry's, Syl.
Come on, it'll be fun. My treat.
You do realize that I have more money than you. A lot more money. I can pay for my own $2 tacos.
Which makes my offer to pay even more generous.
God, will you stop resisting me?
I slap his shoulder, growling. I need to get out of this house. It's starting to feel like a tomb. And Dad, I didn't want to have to tell you this, but you're starting to smell real bad. If you insist on keeping the beard, then you've at least got to take a shower.
I was considering becoming a hippie and wallowing in my own natural odor full time.
Nice. That shouldn't damage your future dating prospects one little bit. My left hand is still on his back, so I feel the muscles in his shoulder tense. We haven't talked about what he wants to do next, if he's planning on giving things another shot with Mom, or if that's it. They're done, and he'll be filing for divorce. I honestly haven't been able to think about it. Sure, selfishly, things still feel pretty normal for me right now, but if my parents get a divorce, I don't know how that will color my view of the world moving forward. I don't really know who I would be in a world where my parents weren't the notorious Cameron and Celeste anymore. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what I think. This is their thing, their issue, their life together. I'm old enough and mature enough to understand and accept that. Max, on the other hand, God, I have no idea how he's taking any of this. He must be so fucking confused. For an 11-year-old, this whole mess must be frankly terrifying. It's Max's 12th birthday soon. It's always been our family tradition to take him to the aquarium over in Bellingham, but God knows what's going to happen now. Mom's definitely going to want to spend the day with him, and so is Dad. Are they going to end up fighting over him like he's some kind of pawn to be used to hurt the other person? I really hope not. I couldn't bear to stand by and watch that happen. If Mom and Dad do get a divorce, then at some point, one of them is going to start dating again. Eventually, new people will be introduced into Max's life, people that just shouldn't be there, and he's going to have to grow up in this strange, alien childhood that I never had to endure. We are going to turn out very different people because of it, and that, to me, is the saddest thing in the world. These thoughts all occur to me in one harrowing split second. Dad places a hand on the banister railing, turning around to face me, and when I see the look on his face, I get the feeling that the same thoughts all just occurred to him, too. If I could, I would ease the heavy burden he's carrying on his shoulders. I'd remove the frown that creases his brow every waking moment of his day. If someone could wave a magic wand and give me one shot at time travel, offering me the opportunity to go back and change just one thing, I wouldn't change what happened to me in Leon Wickham's bathroom. I would go back and find my mother the day before she first allowed herself to fall prey to her desires and sleep with her boss, and I would tell her about all of the hurt and pain she would cause if she didn't remember that she was a married woman.
I don't think we need to worry about my future dating prospects, Dad says wearily. Raleigh's a small town. I went to high school with most of the women here. I wouldn't date any of them even if they were single. None of them have changed since we were seniors, and they weren't particularly nice people back then. I don't suppose any of us were.
Dad.
Screw it, he says loudly, slapping his hand against the banister railing. This conversation just got really dark and depressing, didn't it? I do need to get out of the house. Maybe those tacos aren't such a bad idea after all. Give me 20 minutes and we'll head out.
He turns and charges up the stairs before I can say anything else. Not that I wanted to continue the conversation, of course. It really did get dark and fucking depressing. I manage to corral Nipper in the kitchen while Dad's upstairs getting ready. And I have the kitchen cordoned off, the dog safely secured inside, by the time he comes downstairs dressed in a fresh, pressed button-down shirt and a clean pair of jeans. He looks like a brand new person, a much happier person than the man who looked down at me on the staircase just now. He even manages a smile as he snatches up his worn red Converse from the shoe rack by the door and begins to jam them onto his feet. I'm not sure I'd call that appropriate footwear, Dad. The weather is not so great.
Don't be such a baby. I've been wearing Chucks come rain or shine since the 80s. Pretty sure I'll be fine.
We're laughing together, joking around, arguing about which music was better, the 80s or the 90s, when Dad pulls the front door open
and a piece of debris hurtles past the doorway.
Jesus!
He bars the doorway with his arm, halting me from stepping forward. The projectile, probably the best term for it, turns out to be one of the fence posts from the McLaurin's yard next door, and it narrowly missed Dad's face. The staked end of the post is now buried in our front lawn, the post itself sticking out of the lawn at a weird angle, wobbling from the force with which it hit the ground. There's at least 4 inches of fresh snow on the driveway, wet and slushy, thick as cement. In patches, the ground is visibly waterlogged and muddy. When a blast of frigid, icy wind swirls around the porch, trying to find its way inside the house, Dad issues an unspoken retreat and shuffles us back so he can slam the door closed.
Fine, he concedes. I guess I'll find my sight boots.
Seconds after the words leave his lips, the lights in the hallway flicker out and die. Me. Worried about you. Do you still have power? Ours is out. Alex.
Yep. Separate grid over here.
In case you forgot, Salt and Ash is a 5-star trailer park. Me. Dad and I are at the diner. Come meet us? Alex.
Doubt the wholesome Raleigh types would appreciate me bringing down the neighborhood. Have to work in a couple of hours anyway. Pick you up for school tomorrow?
Me. Yes, please. Alex.
Silver.
Me. Yeah? Alex.
Ti amo, tesoro.
Me. I know what that one means, and I love you too. In some small towns, when the power goes out, the locals batten down the hatches and stay indoors, waiting out Mother Nature with their families, checking their storm lanterns, rifling in the kitchen drawers for batteries, borrowing scented candles from their bathrooms, and making sure to open up the freezer door as infrequently as possible to avoid defrosting the food inside. Not in Raleigh. For the most part, the people of Raleigh all band together, bringing whatever non-electrical entertainment they might have at home, from Scrabble boards to decks of cards to coloring books for the children, and everyone converges at Harry's. It's a community institution, and all are welcome. One year, Halliday's mom even brought a piñata she'd purchased in advance of Halliday's little brother's birthday, and the kids had had an impromptu party. They chose the songs they wanted to hear on the jukebox and danced and played until they were so tired they collapsed one by one to the diner's floor and slept, dropping like exhausted 7-year-old puppies. As Dad and I adhere to Raleigh tradition, heading in the direction of the diner, the sky's so dark, it almost looks like dusk is approaching. The horizon is a bruised, angry-looking shade of purple. Even at the beginning of winter, the days are normally bright by 11 in the morning. Not today, though. Halfway to Harry's, the heavens grow even darker, and Dad has to turn on the van's fog lights as we cautiously complete the rest of the drive across town. Out of the windshield, swings and front yards rock and spin crazily, trees sway wildly, bowing too far for safety. And yet, despite the madness and all of the toppled-over trash cans, there's a stillness to the world. It feels abandoned, deserted, like the end of the world really did take place while Dad and I were holed up at the house and no one thought to tell us. The parking lot at Harry's is full, so we have to leave the van on the next side street over. Dad links arms with me as we make our dash from the safety and warmth of the van toward the single-story building, blazing light into the late morning gloom. I shriek at the cold wind that lances through my jacket and drives its way down the back of my shirt. The sound of my cry is ripped away by the wind so quickly that I don't even hear it. Cam! Silver! You made it! Behind the counter, Harry's wife Caitlin is busy setting muffins out onto a large metal catering tray. She looks a little harried, her steel gray hair falling loose from the normally neat and tidy bun on top of her head, but her eyes are bright and she's smiling from ear to ear. She lives for this stuff. So does Harry. It'd be easy enough for them to close up shop on a day like today. The diner invariably gets trashed by so many bodies crammed into such a small establishment, and no one pays for anything. It costs them money to host Raleigh's residents at the diner on bad weather days. Any other small business owner would see that as more of an inconvenience than a blessing. Caitlin and Harry are cut from a different cloth, though. Running the diner has never been about the bottom line for them. They've always kept their prices as low as possible in an effort to make sure that even the families who only have a little can afford to come and eat at their place every once in a while. And it's a point of pride for them that people rally here, a point of pride that they've created a place where the people know they'll be safe and taken care of in times of need.
"Barely, Kate, by the skin of our teeth," my father replies to the old woman. "There's a transformer down on Ridgehurst by the looks of things. Power company's probably gonna take 5 hours to get the damn thing. How's the generator holding up? You got enough gas?"
Caitlin winks at me, laughing. "He's a worrier, isn't he? The generator's fine. We have enough gas to keep it running for the next 3 days if needs be. Why don't you help yourselves to a coffee and find somewhere to sit? I'm gonna need some help in an hour or so, once Harry has lunch ready, if you'd like to pitch in."
"Of course."
The diner's busy, but it's not bursting at the seams just yet. We've arrived just in time. In an hour, there won't be any seats left at all, but for now, I actually managed to score us our own booth. I slump against the padded backrest, groaning with relief as the first sip of the coffee Dad brought hits my lips and travels down my throat. Warmth spreads out across my chest, and the cold that sunk into the marrow of my bones outside finally begins to thaw. Dad looks out of the window to his right, a soft smile suspended on his face, but his eyes seem distant, sad. The chatter of our friends and neighbors surrounds us as they gossip and laugh together, but the contagious, lighthearted atmosphere inside the diner doesn't appear to have infected my father. My heart thumps painfully, so hard it feels like it's struggling to beat. I reach across the table and take his hand, giving it a reassuring squeeze, and he looks over at me. The smile spreads to his eyes, warming the sadness right out of his expression. But I'm no fool. I know my father. He is not okay.
"Silver, I wanted to speak to you, but I don't really know how. I'm not very good at this kind of stuff."
Ah, now this is a look I recognize too. I let go of his hand, drawing back into my seat. A tightness spreads across my chest, fingers of panic clawing up my spine. He wants to talk about what happened. He wants to ask again for the names of the boys who assaulted me. I can't. I don't think I can. Thoughts burst inside my head like bubbles, popping before they have chance to fully form. I cannot talk to him about this. Not now. Not yet. I wish there was a way I could, but—
Stop. I can see you shutting down already. I'm not—
He shakes his head, the muscles in his jaw popping, his frustrations plain as day.
I'm not going to ask you about that. I just want to know if you're happy, Silver. That's all. You seem like—
He drums his fingers against the table.
You seem like you're content enough. I hear you laugh, I see you smile, and all the while I'm thinking, fuck, I hope she's not pretending. I hope she doesn't feel like she's dying inside and she thinks she has to fake being happy to protect us from what happened to her. Because that, I couldn't bear that, Silver.
My instant response is to reassure him, to jump in with the promise that I'm fine and that I'm perfectly happy these days. But he doesn't want to hear that. He wants the truth from me, and I owe him that much. I've kept so much from him for so long that imparting this small piece of honesty seems vital now. I clear my throat, leaning my temple against the window next to me. The glass is cold and spackled with condensation, but I barely even notice as I consider my father's question. Some mornings, I wake up, and I can feel a pair of hands closing around my throat. It's like the fear rises up inside me when I'm asleep, and there's nothing I can do about it. I don't have nightmares about what happened anymore, but occasionally, I think the truth of all that violence and panic catches up with me when I'm unconscious, and it just festers. And when it's like that and I wake up, I can sometimes bring it all with me into the waking world, and it's enough to make me feel like I'm going to fucking die. My father's head drops. His eyes are cast down into his coffee mug, but I can read the devastation on him. These are things he never thought he'd hear me say, and it's killing him to hear me admit the hard truth. But when I wake up like that, Dad, that feeling doesn't last long. It takes less than a minute for me to remember how to breathe again, and then I duck down so that I'm in his field of vision, so he can see that I'm smiling and that it's genuine. Then I remember that it's all over and done with, and it's in the past. Yes, it's hard to be at school a lot of the time. And yes, there are moments when I'm so fucking angry that I feel like I'm going to explode. But there are far more moments when I'm with you or I'm with Alex, when nothing affects me whatsoever. I feel invincible half the time now, and that feels great. I'm not saying that I'll ever be able to forget what was done to me, or that I'll just get past it and there'll come a day when I don't even think about it anymore. That'd be a lie. What happened to me, it is an injury. My body healed from it, but I think the scar of it will always remain inside of me. But a scar is proof of healing. A scar is a testimony to strength. I'm not ashamed of it anymore. It's a part of me, and I'm slowly figuring out how to accept all of those different, separate parts of myself, no matter how ugly or twisted they might be, because they make me who I am, right? I am okay, Dad. I promise. When you hear me laugh, when you see me smile, it is real. It is the truth. Always. Okay? Dad leans back in his seat, resting the coffee cup against his chest, propping it up against his solar plexus. His hair is much darker than mine. His eyes are dark too. It used to hurt me so fucking much that I didn't look more like him. It never seemed right to me that I ended up looking so much like Mom, with her hair color and the same blue-gray eyes, the same shaped face even, with the same slightly upturned nose. I always felt as though if I looked more like him, then I would belong to him more, somehow. I don't feel that way anymore. I know I belong to him, like I know the sun is going to rise in the east and set in the west. I don't need to see his eyes staring back at me whenever I look in the mirror, because I realized I want to be like him in other, more important ways. He's kind and he's strong. The man can do basically anything he sets his mind to. He's relentless when he decides he's going to accomplish something. He'd do anything to help someone if they needed him. He knows how to really listen when someone is speaking and not just wait for his turn to speak. I wasn't born with any of these qualities coded into my genetics, but my father shows me every day that there are choices I can make that will result in me being a better fucking human because of it. I already know it. Have already felt it for years now, but I'm proud as fuck that he's my old man. I think from time to time that he might be proud to have me as a daughter too. This sneaking suspicion is confirmed when he speaks again.
You are one remarkable young woman, Silver Parisi. You know that? He tells me.
Of course, I reply primly, giving him a little seated bow. I'm one in a million.
You should never have had to deal with any of that shit on your own. I can't tell you how sorry I am that you thought you couldn't come to me. I'm seriously disgusted that neither your mom nor I noticed things had changed with you. Neither of us will be winning a Parent of the Year award anytime soon. That was just fucking disgraceful.
It's okay, Dad. I get it. I might tease you about being old, but I know you're still young. You want a life for yourself outside of just being someone's dad. You're entitled to that. You were working on your book. Mom was
busy having an affair and fucking the shit out of her boss.
I shudder, closing my eyes. It doesn't matter what Mom was doing. I'm okay now, and that's all that matters, right? Dad shifts in his seat, watching me for a moment. He drains what's left of his coffee and sets his mug down on the table between us.
It's because of him, isn't it? Moretti, he's the reason why you're okay.
Oh, Lord. He smirks.
What?
I really don't want to talk about Alex with you.
Why not?
When a girl has a conversation with her father about the guy she's seeing, things inevitably jackknife and take a turn for the worse. I can't think of anything more disturbing than you trying to give me a safe sex talk right now. He laughs, one single solitary bark of laughter, and I realize it's the first time I've heard that sound in what seems like months. It's a relief to know he's still capable.
Silver, I was 17 not that long ago. Feels like it was last week, for Christ's sake. I'm not going to give you the safe sex talk. I'm going to trust that you're being smart, and we're going to pretend like neither of us actually even said the word sex out loud. I only want to know if he's made things better for you, Sil. Because if he has, then I can only be grateful to the guy.
I sit very still, staring down at my hands, thinking. Thinking about Alex Moretti. How can I explain to my father that Alex hasn't just made things better for me, that he's changed them entirely. How can I tell him that I know I've found a missing piece of my soul and I never want to be apart from him without sounding like an infatuated, simpering, teenaged idiot? Do I even know the words to describe the swelling, rising, euphoric sensation in my chest whenever Alex simply looks at me? Or the way I feel deeply, fundamentally, intrinsically safe whenever I find myself wrapped up in his arms? There's just too much to say on the topic of Alex Moretti, so I keep things simple. "Yes, it is," I answer. "In a way, it's because of Alex that things are better for me. He's mine," I say quietly.
"He's yours?"
I can't decide if Dad looks like he's about to laugh at my stupid claim, or if he's about to yell at me for being moronic enough to think the world begins and ends with a boy from high school. Bracing, I wait to see which version of him I'll end up with, flinching a little. But Dad neither laughs nor ridicules.
"Okay, kiddo," he says simply. "I know how that feels."
God, the poor guy. That's how he felt about Mom. I sigh, turning to watch the snowflake streak past the diner's window, cringing at the sight of the bundled up figures hunched against the cold, hurrying down the street toward the hardware store.
"You looking for him?" Dad asks quietly. "You think he's going to show up?"
Slowly, kind of sadly, I shake my head. He doesn't know Raleigh well enough, and Raleigh doesn't know him well enough either. Not everyone's as badass as you, Dad. People are judgmental assholes sometimes. I don't think he feels welcome.
"You should invite him," Dad says over the top of his coffee mug.
"Oh, I already have," I smile ruefully. I think it would take 5 personal invitations from 5 other members of Raleigh to convince my boyfriend he was wanted here. And even then, he still probably wouldn't come.
5. Alex. Me. I miss you. Me. I need you. Me. I fucking want you. It's 7 in the morning, still dark outside, and I've typed the same message to Silver at least 15 times, asking her to come over. She'll still be asleep, curled up in her nice warm bed, but if I could have my way, I'd disturb her slumber and ask her to come all the way across town just to see me. Pretty fucking selfish, I know. Which is why I deleted the messages I typed out, grumbling under my breath each time, groaning at the fact that I can't get the thought of her out of my head, and I keep picturing her in the little shorts she wears to bed. I'm basically about to explode. It's fucking freezing in the trailer, like sub-zero Arctic fucking temperatures, which would usually be enough to make my dick forget how to function and have my balls retract up inside my goddamn stomach. But not this morning. Nope, this morning my raging boner is impervious to the cold. It's demanding some hardcore attention, and there's absolutely nothing I can do about it. I'm done jerking off. I haven't touched myself since before I went and found Silver up at the cabin. All right, well, I may have been feeling a little sorry for myself in the hospital after having major surgery to remove the bullet that was lodged in my chest. I might have jerked off then, just the once. But I figure that didn't count since I'd nearly just fucking died and all. Fucking sue me. Apart from that, I haven't made myself come. I've been saving all of my pent-up sexual energy for Silver, and holy fuck has it been worth it. At this point, I'm a professional at delaying my own orgasm. I can hold off forever if needs be, and I take great pleasure in doing just that. I've waited for her, cultivated the patience of a fucking saint. I've kept my hands to myself and I've played it cool. It hasn't been fucking easy holding back, but there's something truly bittersweet about denying myself and making sure it's Silver who comes to me for attention. That way, the release is so much fucking greater when it comes. But I'm also never second-guessing myself. If we have sex, it's because she's wanted it. There's never been any doubt. She's made the first move. She's crawled for it on her hands and her knees because she's wanted it so fucking bad. And I know without a shadow of a doubt, I haven't coerced her into anything simply because I'm fucking horny. Fog plumes on my breath, clouding above my head as I lie in bed, staring up at the bedroom ceiling. I contemplate getting up so I can turn on the heating and get a fire going in the wood burner. But the prospect of throwing back the covers is just too much to fucking handle right now, so I remain bundled up trying to convince myself that I'm a good guy and I should not text Silver. My phone buzzes against my chest underneath the blankets less than a second later, and the salacious, hungry part of me crows with delight. It's from Silver. Who else would be messaging me at this time in the morning? And if she's awake, then would it really be so bad if I suggested she drive her fine ass over here immediately? I bite my bottom lip, riddled with anticipation, as I check the screen of my cell phone. And then I see the name at the top of the text and curse like a fucking sailor. It isn't her after all. Monty. You still got the bag? I'd barely made it home the other night. The roads were hazardous, and the driving snow ended up blowing directly into the Camaro's windshield, making it almost impossible to see where the fuck I was going. It came down so thick and fast, I couldn't even see the road after a while. It's a miracle I didn't wind up wrapped around a street lamp. But the St. Christopher around my neck must have been working overtime or something, because I made it back to meet Silver in one piece. Monty called just as I'd arrived home later, wanting me to wait to hand off the bag so I'd been spared the need to go out into the cold for a second time in the early hours of the morning, and I'd gone straight to bed. I didn't see him at the Rock during my shift last night, so I've been sitting on the thing ever since. Me. Yeah, it's in the trunk of my car. Monty. I'll send someone over for it this afternoon. Me. Copy that. He was sweating the night he told me I had to go out to Bellingham. The bag had seemed vitally important. Now he's not planning on retrieving it until this afternoon? Doesn't make much sense. But whatever. Not my business. I'm just glad he didn't say he needs me to drive it over there right now. It's almost time to throw my ass in the shower and get ready for school. I'm going to have to get up in a minute anyway. But for now, the warm cocoon of my bed is demanding that I stay. My thoughts grind to a halt at the sound, a clicking, scraping sound off to the right in the living room, a metallic grating noise that doesn't belong in the silence of the early winter morning inside of my trailer. It's a quiet sound at first, but grows increasingly louder as I slowly get up out of bed and pick up the handle of the woodcutter's axe I keep beside the bed. My chest and my feet are bare. But there's no time to find socks and a shirt. Someone's trying to bust the lock on the trailer door, and I'm about to give them an epic fucking headache. Poor stupid son of a bitch. Should have done a little research before deciding to pick my trailer to break into. The blinds at the windows in the living room are drawn. Outside, dawn is breaking over Raleigh, but the weak morning light is barely enough to lighten the gloom, and I almost crack my shin on the corner of the coffee table as I tiptoe around it. Pausing, I wait by the door, axe held high over my head, waiting. The brass handle slowly turns. I rip the door open, already swinging, teeth bared, anger firing in my veins. But when I see who's standing there on my front doorstep, eyes wide in horror, it takes every ounce of strength I possess to angle the axe's blade to the side, driving the honed metal into the doorframe. Silver's father opens his mouth, eyes locked on the axe now buried in the door jamb next to his head. He inhales a long, seemingly endless breath. When he's let it out, he turns to look at me and arches an eyebrow.
And a good morning to you, Moretti.
Oh, fucking shit. I wrench at the axe handle, ripping it from the doorframe, not knowing if my weak-ass smile should be nervous, awkward, sheepish, or all three. Mr. Parisi, good morning. He folds his arms across his chest, huffing down his nose.
Is this how you greet everyone who pays you a visit, or just the fathers of the girls you're sleeping with?
Okay, not sure how to respond to that one. It's how I greet people who appear to be breaking into my place, I offer, my voice trailing up at the end into a question, much safer to just avoid the comment about me fucking his daughter. Acknowledging that comment can only lead to disaster. Now it's Daddy Parisi's turn to look a little awkward.
Yeah, well, I knocked, but there was no answer, so...
No, you didn't.
I'm sorry. If I heard you shuffling around out here, screwing around with the lock, you don't think I'd have heard you actually trying to get my attention? He stares at me, dark eyes boring into mine. A moment later, he shrugs, shoving his gloved hands into the pockets of his thick, down jacket.
Okay, fine. You're right. I didn't knock. I was trying to break in. I just figured,
I'm paying attention. Like, really paying attention. I've met Mr. Parisi a number of times since the night I sat down next to Silver and she told her parents that she was raped. I've been polite, respectful, and I've made damn sure I never let things get too far with Silver under his roof. It would have been pretty fucking shitty to have had him walk in when I was balls deep in his pride and joy. All in all, I've been a model boyfriend, and he's been... Well, he's been Mr. Parisi. Quick with the self-effacing jokes, smart, quiet as a rule, observant. I know when I'm being watched. I haven't really been able to get a solid read on the guy, to figure out who he really is. But never in a million years did I suspect he was the type of guy to break and enter. This is a new, highly interesting version of Mr. Parisi that I'm keen on meeting face to face. He grimaces, kicking the toe of his rubber boot against the concrete step.
I wanted to see for myself what kind of shit you've got going on, Moretti. Silver, she's serious about you, and I know how things are for a guy like you. I wanted to see if there was a stripper in your bed. I wanted to see if there were needles sitting on your countertops. I didn't want to give you any time to hide anything that might be damning.
Okay, fair enough. So I might not appreciate the judgment, or the mistrust, or the invasion of my fucking privacy, but I respect his motives. He's here looking out for Silver. He's doing his job as a father. Letting my head drop back, I narrow my eyes, studying the guy. He's nothing like any of the bastards I found myself stuck with in the past. I don't get alarm bells with Mr. Parisi. If anything, I think he's pretty cool, which is weird, since I decided a long time ago that parenthood, with immediate effect, turns people into raging assholes. Taking a step back, I hold the door open, jerking my head inside. Come on then, take a look. I'll make sure to keep my hands where you can see him. He looks unsure, slightly annoyed, and tired. Poor fucker probably hasn't been sleeping much. I guess insomnia is a reasonable side effect of infidelity and rape.
You think I won't call your bluff?
He asks flatly. I'm not bluffing, come in. I'm 3 seconds away from dying of hypothermia. It's fucking true, too. I don't have a clue what the official word on the weather is, but it's still snowing. At least another 15 inches must have come down overnight, and from the gray, ominous, brooding morning that's breaking now, it doesn't look like it's gonna stop snowing anytime soon, either. Definitely not the kind of temperatures you want to stand around in not wearing a shirt. Mr. Parisi grunts as he climbs up the step and enters the trailer. I grab the t-shirt I was wearing last night from the back of the couch, quickly throwing it on, pretty pleased that I've been able to cover and tidy up a little at the same time. The trailer is by no means spotless, but I keep it fairly clean and in order. Gary, fucking psycho that he was, would try and knock out a couple of teeth if he found my corner of the basement in disarray. When I first moved in here, into my own space, where I could do whatever the fuck I wanted without consequence, I trashed the place on purpose. It felt like I'd won some sort of war every time I walked in through the door and had to step over mountains of dirty clothes and empty beer bottles in order to reach the couch. Wasn't long before I was back in the habit of tidying up after myself, though. As it turned out, living in filth and chaos is pretty miserable. Mr. Parisi casts a dark look around, taking everything in. His expression is blank, concealing his thoughts as he walks around the perimeter of the living room, scanning the bookshelves, the side table where I keep the record player, the coffee table, and the little end tables by the couch that I snagged from a yard sale last summer.
No ashtrays? You don't smoke?
Mr. Parisi asks. I prop myself up against the wall, raising my eyebrows. Occasionally, only when I've had a beer or two, never around Silver.
So you drink then?
I give him a wry look. I'm 17, I work at a bar, yes, I drink. He flares his nostrils.
Around Silver?
Yes, but never in excess, never so I can't take care of her properly.
Does she drink?
I laugh softly under my breath. I think I'm holding up pretty well under this impromptu inspection, but I'm not going to narc on your daughter. You know Silver. You know who she is, right? He glares at me, jaw working.
Of course I do. She's a good girl. I trust her.
Then you don't need to be asking me questions like that. You know she drinks, but you also know she's smart. She doesn't get herself into dangerous situations or do shit you need to worry about. Not after what happened. An anguished flicker of pain flares in the man's eyes. I see my own feelings reflected in his face as he pivots to face me. It's all there. The fury, the anger, the fiery need for vengeance.
She still won't tell me who hurt her, you know? She won't give me their names,
he says quietly. Yeah, I guess she's just handling it the only way she feels she can.
But you know who did it, don't you?
Mr. Parisi.
Why would she tell you and not me?
I open my mouth, relying on the fact that I usually know what to say in most situations. But this time, I don't. I grasp for an answer to give to him, one that makes sense and might even make him feel better. But that answer just isn't there. I honestly don't know. Maybe she's just worried about you. Your family's been through a lot of shit lately, right? He blows out a hard breath, grinding his teeth together.
That doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter what's going on in our lives. She should know that she can count on me to be there for her no matter what.
I have zero experience dealing with parents who actually care about their kids. Honestly, seeing the raw emotion on Mr. Parisi's face is freaking me the fuck out. I have no idea how to react to it. I doubt he'd be stoked if I waltzed up to him and gave him a hug. So, I do the only thing I can think of and pretend I haven't noticed the way his eyes are shining a little too brightly. She knows you care about her. She knows you're there for her. She came to you in the end, when she was ready. She'll give you the missing pieces of the story, too. You just need to be patient with her. Mr. Parisi seems to think on this. I'm stunned when the guy sighs heavily and collapses down onto my sofa. I've been waiting for him to charge through the rest of the trailer, continuing on his mission to track down all of my elusive hookers and blow. But it appears that mission has been abandoned for the time being.
You love her,
he says, a statement. I set my jaw, lifting my chin. Yes. Mr. Parisi glances at me out of the corner of his eye and laughs bitterly under his breath.
No need for the posturing, Moretti. I'm not here to tell you to stay away from her. I do want to know one thing, though.
All right, ask.
If you love her, then...
His voice cracks. He has to take a second before he can finish his sentence.
What did you do to those motherfuckers when you found out what they'd done to her?
Fuck. It feels like he's just landed a right hook to my gut. I growl, banging the back of my head against the wall behind me.
Nothing. I didn't do a single thing.
What? Silver's father looks like he's about to leap up from the sofa and fasten his hands around my throat. I wouldn't blame him either.
She trusted you with that information, and you did nothing? How the hell can you say you love her if she made me promise? I don't give a shit. If you care about someone and you make them a promise, you keep it no matter what. How many promises have you made to Silver? How many of those have you broken? Because I've only made the one so far, and I don't intend on breaking it. Not ever. She made me swear to her that I wouldn't use violence against them or break the law. She tied my fucking hands. Right now, all I can do is bide my time. There will be justice for the people who hurt her, believe me. I'm not just going to let them get away with it. But I've earned your daughter's trust. It's the most valuable fucking thing in the world to me, and there's no way in hell I'm breaking it. The poor fucker's taken his gloves off, and his hands are balled into fists on the tops of his knees. I can see it written all over him. This man needs to hit something, or someone. He's been through hell and back recently, and he's had no fucking release from any of it. If he doesn't hit me right here and now, then it'll only be a matter of time. At some point, he's going to snap. He's going to hit something, and when he does, there are going to be some real fucking fireworks. He's a tall guy, the same height as me,
I doubt he's really worked out in a long time, but he's fit. In relatively good shape. I'm sure I'd be able to take him in a fight, but it's a really bad fucking idea. I can't let things get that far. Silver would be devastated if I ended up trading blows with her old man. But more than that, I bear him no ill will. Fighting with him wouldn't do anyone any real favors, even if it did help him temporarily blow off some steam. Time to enter peacemaker mode, then. I sigh, pushing away from the wall and crossing the living room to join him on the couch. He flinches when I sink down next to him, as if I've suddenly jarred him from a waking nightmare that had taken him over and clouds his mind. His fists unclench reflexively. When I was 10, I was staying at this group home for boys. It was bad there, I tell him. We slept in dorms. I can't really remember how many kids were in my dorm, but there was a pretty big group of us. Must have been between 15 and 20 kids or something. I don't remember when it started, but there was this guy who used to come into the dorm at night and take one of the kids away with him. The boy had been dropped off at the home when he was 6, hadn't even known his own name, so one of the nicer female attendants decided to call him George. This one guy, Mr. Clayton, he took a shine to George. At 1 in the morning, nearly every morning, George would take Mr. Clayton's hand as he pulled him out of his bed, and he would pad barefoot with him in silence out of the dorm.
I don't think I want to hear this story, Alex.
Unblinking, I stare at the clock by the television, waiting for the bright, glowing number 5 on the end of the digital display to change to 6.
You're right. I don't need to go into details, I mutter. We both know what was happening to George. I knew back then, too. I convinced myself I didn't, told myself George was being shown special treatment, that Mr. Clayton preferred George to all of us other boys, and he was sneaking him out in the middle of the night to give him candy and let him watch TV in his private apartment instead of in the drafty, damp homeroom where the rest of us were sometimes allowed to hang out. I felt guilty about that for years, that I didn't stand up and say something that might have stopped Mr. Clayton creeping into our dorm like some sinister fucking shadow after midnight.
You were a child, Alex. I was afraid, is what I was. I'm not afraid anymore, though. I'm not hiding under my bed sheets, pretending to be asleep now, okay? I swear to you that I'm not gonna let those pieces of shit get away with what they did to your girl. The wheels are already turning. It might take a little while, but a day of reckoning is coming. I can promise you that. The man stares at the clock on the wall, too. He seems to simmer on what I've just said for a very long time. Eventually, he says,
I suppose I'm just going to have to be satisfied with that then, aren't I?
For the time being, yes. He sucks in a long, slow breath, closing his eyes, and it's as though a wave of relief has just washed over him.
Fine. But I'm her father, Alex. I should be the one carving up those sick little fuckers. It's my right.
I don't respond to that. He needs to sit in it for a second, to ruminate on what he's just said without me adding anything to it. Eventually he grimaces, shaking his head.
That was a stupid thing to say. I have no right to anything. It didn't happen to me. I know that. I'm sorry.
Hey, no need to be sorry, man. You're fucked up. You're fucked up because of what went down. I'm fucked up because of it too. Ironic, really. That Silver's the only person with any real right to anything, and yet she's the least fucked up out of all of us. He smiles sadly, his eyes roaming around the room again, taking everything in for a second time. He's not pretending to look for drugs now. He's just seeing the place.
She's always been like that, he says absently. Really well put together, mentally. Even when she was a kid, she handled every upset, big and small, with this weird kind of understanding and just this resilience that always blew us away. She's so damn strong. I think that's why her mother and I kind of forgot we were her parents for a second there. Before all of this, it hadn't occurred to me that Silver might actually need anything from me in a very long time. She's just so unshakable.
She's broken down in front of me before. Just that once, outside the cabin. I understand what he means when he says that she's unshakable. I know how people tick. I can see when they're about to snap, and I never thought Silver might break down the way she did. I went up to that cabin in the middle of the night, and it didn't occur to me for one second that it might have been a bad idea, because she'd been vulnerable and hurt before, because she hadn't known I was coming, and she might have been scared by an unexpected vehicle pulling up out of the dark down that long, winding driveway. I'd just assumed it would be fine because she seemed so well put together, as her father just said. A soft rushing sound disturbs the silence as an avalanche of snow slides from the pitched eave above the window behind us and lands with a whoomph outside. They tell us all kinds of stories when we're kids, about us being stronger than them, I say quietly. Women, truth is, we're the weak ones. We need to think we're protecting them to protect our egos. Meanwhile, they're the ones keeping us together half the time. Mr. Parisi nods slowly, bathed in the watery, insubstantial light of the morning that snuck its way through a crack in the blinds and is hitting him square in the face. You are righter than you know. We're forever underestimating them, aren't we? We sit in silence for a while, both deeply lost in our thoughts. When the clock by the television reaches 7:40, I sit up, rubbing awkwardly at the back of my neck. I've never had to kick my girlfriend's father out of my place before. I'm gonna have to get ready for school, Mr. Parisi. He blinks rapidly, looking a little stunned. Jesus, I'm sorry. I was a million miles away. I forgot. No school today. Half of the faculty are snowed in. The storm's going to get worse this afternoon. They're saying tomorrow's officially going to reach blizzard status. Coldest temperatures recorded in the last 20 years. Shit. Yeah, shit. Get some things together. Enough for a couple of days. If we head back now, we might be able to grab some supplies at the store before everything shuts down. I'm sorry, get some things together? Mr. Parisi groans half-heartedly, getting to his feet. Well, I promised myself, didn't I? I swore if I didn't find you over here in bed with some other girl and there was no hypodermic hanging out of your arm, I'd take you back home with me. Only until the storm passes, that is, he adds quickly. I still don't get it. Why? Well, he says slowly. Silver said something yesterday about you that made me think, and I know just how fucking miserable living in a trailer can be if they're not weatherproofed. He means well, I know he does, but I can't help but be a little offended. Heat rises up the back of my neck, burning the way embarrassment and shame are wont to do. I've taken care of this place. See for yourself, watertight, no drafts. It'll be blazing hot in here once I've... Alex, whoa. I didn't mean anything by it. I know you're capable. I can see with my own two eyes that you're managing perfectly fine here by yourself. What I should have said... Fuck, he huffs. I'm sorry. What I should have said is that it sounds like most of us are getting snowed in for the next few days, and I know how much it would suck to be snowed in by yourself, and I know how happy it would make my daughter if you were snowed in with her. So, Christ, there's no need to make this harder than it already is, okay? The heat, along with my anger, subsided the second he told me he knew that I was capable. Now I'm just a little entertained by this whole series of events. He's inviting me, in a stilted roundabout way, to hang out at their place so I won't be alone. Part of me wants to laugh at the absurdity of it. I've been alone most of my fucking life. What's a couple more days shut off from the outside world? But the rest of me is kind of fucking numb. No one's ever come for me before, shown up to take me away so I'll be safe and warm and around other people. I don't really know what to do with that. I get up, wondering if I even have a bag big enough to gather 3 days' worth of clothes inside. Thank you, sir. That's very kind. Silver's father rolls his eyes exasperated. For the love of God, don't call me Sir Moretti. That sounds absolutely fucking ridiculous. Just call me Cam, for Christ's sake.
6. Silver. The house is silent as the grave when I wake up. It's strange to lie beneath the covers with my eyes closed, hearing absolutely nothing. Not too long ago, I'd have been burying my head under my pillows, trying to block out the chatter of the television in the living room,
and Max's tuneless, obnoxiously loud singing in the bathroom down the hall, while Mom and Dad hurled a volley of shouted questions back and forth at one another downstairs. I remain still, eyes closed, trying to gauge what time it is without checking the Mickey Mouse watch resting on my nightstand, and a heavy, regretful burn settles over me, taking root in my chest. I used to be frustrated as hell by all the early morning noise and commotion, especially on the weekends when I was supposed to be able to sleep in. But now, the silence that hovers in the empty rooms of this house feels almost deafening. How did this even happen? Were there signs that things were falling apart right before they disintegrated and no one fucking noticed? Could my parents have done more to love one another? Could I have done more to keep us all together? These questions plague me more and more. It hasn't escaped me that Mom began her illicit affair with her boss 1 month after I was attacked at Leon's party. I was sullen during that month. Quiet, withdrawn, and scared. My fear hadn't manifested itself in the way it might have in other teenagers. I got really, really angry. I lashed out. I refused to listen to or obey simple requests. I fought with my mom over every single little thing, roaring at her whenever she opened her mouth to say something, and in turn, she snapped and sniped at me, grounding me day after day for my insolence. It was a bad month. If I hadn't been so difficult, would she have gone looking for comfort in the arms of another man? Would she and Dad have emerged through the other side of whatever rough patch they were going through and been fine if I hadn't been so unmanageable? These ifs serve no real purpose, I know. Life's one big spiderweb of decisions, actions, cause and effect, one domino after another toppling, knocking the next one down, then the next, then the next. Trying to unravel what would have happened if one small thing in the Parisi household had been different is not only impossible, but futile. The past is set in stone, and there's no changing it now, no matter how badly I might want to go back. I throw my duvet over my head, fully aware that it's still snowing outside. I can feel the weight of the sky bearing down on the house. It's probably been dumping all night, which isn't the best. Getting to school is a hair-raising experience on heavy snow days, and ding! Shit. My cell phone buzzes on the nightstand next to my bed, disrupting the silence. I start, nearly jumping out of my damn skin. But then, a slow, secret smile spreads across my face. I have no clue what the official time is, but I do know it's early. There's only one person who'd be texting me at this time in the morning, and a message from Alex is definitely worth opening my eyes for. Blearily, I prop myself up on one elbow, blinking rapidly, giving myself a second to accustom myself to the gray, weak morning light, before I reach over and pick up my cell.